Mr. Dennis Romack on the bass guitar. And on my right, Mr. Bobby Wayne on rhythm guitar, singing harmony. Over on my far left, Mr. Norman Hamlet on the steel guitar. Mr. Roy Nichols on the lead electric guitar. They just released an instrumental album not too long ago, and it's called Introducing the Strangers. The first song on the album is called Stealing Corn, and here they are to do it. It goes like this. 1, 2, 3, 4.
You are listening to the Generation Exploitation Podcast and Laugh Tracks, a show about comedy on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. My name is Cliff Nesteroff.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Albert Brooks.
Thank you. Hello, and congratulations on your purchase. This fine recording is a combination of material. Some recorded live at the Troubadour in Los Angeles, some recorded elsewhere. The last part of this album is called Comedy Minus One. And this is where you have the chance to become the comedian, or comedian, and get the laughs. But more about that later. I would like to say that during the live portion of this record, no laughter has been altered in any way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, I have with me here a notary public who will swear to this fact. You're a notary public.
Yes.
And you swear to this fact.
Sure.
Well, that's just about it. Oh, yes. When you hear the yodel, you turn the record over. So, without wasting any more time, let's go now to the Troubadour. Well, wait. Let's waste just a little more time. Fine. Let's go now to the Troubadour. We join me in progress. There's mics all around here. There's a recording truck outside. A record is being made. There's nothing you have to worry about. Just, you know, have a good time. Just don't identify your laughter. A lot of people like to do, you know, ha, 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 said Bill Harrison of Phoenix. By the way, you know, this room is full, and I might say that there's a camera up there right now. There's a Jewish audience in the Wilshire Ebell Theater watching this. They do that on high holidays when the temple fills up. They move into theaters, but they never take off the titles of the theater, and thousands of Jews walk out of deep throat. They ought to change the title. This is the, for the last 8 months, the performing I've done has been, as a headliner, I have closed the show. Opening is another story. Neil Diamond was the first person that I ever opened for at all. I had done television before that, but never any live performing, only dead performing. I met him at a college, I guess 4 years ago or so, in Mississippi. I didn't meet him till the actual show. I was met by the student body president who picked me up at the airport, and he said, "You're the comedian, huh?" Yes. "We had Al Capp here last night. He's a witty guy." Oh, boy. I'm in trouble. In trouble. It was all right. It went very well. And I stayed on and off with Neil for about 2 years. I started with him when he was doing small colleges, and my God, I watched the man price his way right out of the business. No, it was getting strange there towards the end. He would perform, then the owner of the building would come and give him the deed to the building. "You own this, and this is my house, and this is my car. Thank you, Mr. Diamond."
ride away on a bike. But no real bad experiences. Once in a while, I'd be in the middle of my act and somebody would yell, "Kentucky woman!" Happy to have her here. Thank you. Now, first of all, concert halls are getting too big anyway. What is it? There must be, what, 450, 500 people here? That's a good-sized crowd. Even up to 4,000 in a place like Philharmonic Hall that's built to handle it. After that, I mean, Grand Funk Railroad sold out Shea Stadium. David Cassidy sold out the Astrodome. 55,000 humans under 8 in one building. There's a disease in there somewhere. I would just like to see the parking for that. That's all I would like to see. More station wagons in one place than anywhere on the earth. Kids, quiet, kids. If Ford ever had to recall all their station wagons, that would be the best way to... Just hold a David Cassidy concert, sir, right in Detroit. They'll all come in, I promise. Yeah, but how do we get the Mercurys back? Get a hold of the coasters. It's getting worse. I mean, there are buildings that are... There's no building large enough now, it seems. A Three Dog Night just passed a law within their group, starting, I think, in 2 months. They will play no more buildings of any kind. They will just play states and do... do 30, 32 concerts a year, stand in the middle of Kentucky and play, and everyone pays that day. Appearing in Kentucky, Three Dog Night! Liar. $8.50. I'm just going to Dayton. You heard it, you pay it. What could the ultimate of that be? They get on a jet plane in New York and fly to Los Angeles and play in the plane, let the military promote the concert, and have everyone in the country pay a dollar. Excuse me, you two. See that plane?
Yes, we do.
$2. Let me treat you, honey.
We're in a department store in the Midwest, and your name is?
Mrs. Hansen.
Mrs. Hansen, you've been listening to this record here. What do you think of what you've heard so far?
I think it's funny. I think it's relevant. I think there's laughs for young and old alike.
And do you think it'll sell?
Oh, I think it'll sell very big. My family, I'm sure, would buy this.
How many in your family?
Well, I don't really have a family. That's just a figure of speech.
I see. I thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Back to the record.
Now, we get into certain rough, few rough concerts will stand out forever. I will talk about one this evening. I opened for Richie Havens in San Antonio, Texas. I did it on a second's notice. I was in New York going back to Los Angeles. Apparently, they had decided to have an opening act instead of not to, so there was no billing involved. The agency called and said, look, your transportation's paid for, you gotta come home anyway, stop off in San Antonio, do the show, make yourself some money. Great. Greed almost ended my life. Now, there was no billing. Now, no billing in most places, you can handle it. San Antonio is a different story. Let me think of the best way to describe it in case you don't know. You will hear, read, see, think, draw, imagine, dream, vomit up the word Alamo till you want to go and hire the Cleveland Wrecking Company and break it down yourself. The Alamo is there. Everything in the town is named after. Every human, every building, everything. Alamo Drugstore. No, we don't, thank you. Alamo Dry Cleaner. In by 10, out by 5. Alamo Movie Theater. 8:30, 10:30, 12:30. Yes, sir. Alamo Mortuary. No, he's dead. Thank you. Every person walking the street. There's Alamo Bradley and his wife, Alamina. Little Alamo Junior. This concert was supposed to start at 8 o'clock. I was in the lobby of the hotel at 7:30, met Richie and his band. We got into a station wagon. Very easygoing guy. Talked to me for a while, talked to the wagon for a bit. Really didn't... Wasn't a hard man to get along with. At 10 minutes to 8, we get to this place that no performing should have been done in. Ever. It was originally built to store manure for the rest of the world. At 8:02... At 2 minutes after 8, not 8:30, not 8:45, 8:02, 6,000 people are in this place going, Richie, 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 45 minutes you can handle. 2 minutes is just silly. How did all those people get organized that quickly? Richie! I'm trying to dance to it, make a rhythm song. Richie. He's sitting there acknowledging. Hey, that's me. I know it is Richie. Great. I was begging for a disc jockey to be there to introduce me. Usually I hate it. But I wanted the disc jockey there because he would come out and the audience would get some of their hostility off on him. Audiences hate disc jockeys. And they have a right to, because generally, for the most part, disc jockeys are the worst human beings in the world. Now look, if there are some disc jockeys here tonight, you might be different. The disc jockey playing this record right now might be a great guy or gal. But for the most part, they're the worst. Now this is not my opinion, this is a medical fact. So it's not... It's not really me who's saying it. The AMA came out with a report about 6 months ago listing the three worst human beings in the world. First was incurable lepers, I'm afraid to say. Second was disc jockey. Third was curable lepers. In between the lepers. How you guys doing? How you doing? Don't you touch, you little rascal. Did you guys switch? Oh, Jesus. Now, the disc jockey comes out on stage, the light hits him, and the audience is boo every time, everywhere. Everywhere in the world. In Hungary, boo, boo, boo. They just boo. But a disc jockey's an amazing human. I envy him. There's something with his inner ear. The hairs are different. I don't know what's... Harvard Medical School is studying the disc jockey's inner ear now. Whatever noise he hears, he can turn instantaneously into a compliment. It's a great thing to see. Boo, you jerk! Thank you, you're beautiful. I said boo, I said thanks. Whatever you say to him. I think your fly is open. It is a great day, isn't it? How are you? There was no disc jockey there. All they had was an offstage mic for me to introduce myself. Now, I opened up the dressing room door, the noise doubled. Richie, open the door. Richie. The closer I got to the stage, the louder it got. I had to hold my ears. There was a guy sitting at this light and sound booth, the last human being before the stage. A sign said that above him, last human before stage. Don't feed. And in the midst of this, Richie, he actually looked up and said, your name Richie? No, it isn't. They're gonna kill you. Thanks very much. I told him to turn up the mic as loud as he could. I thought I'd just give him some great bull introduction, bowl them over. It didn't work. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen! And they didn't even stop. All they did, they just quieted down. Richie. I wasted no time. To open the show this evening, took about 4 seconds. You could hear glasses drop. People open, close, hot, cold, soft, hard. Somebody else is here. Richie, I was dead. They went crazy. Richie. No matter what I said, would have worked. I gave myself some amazing credits. He's Johnny Carson's closest personal friend. He slept with Ed Sullivan. He knows every Chinese human alive. Would you welcome? Nothing. Boo, boo, boo. Now, in most parts of the country, a boo's all right. But down there, it's on a little teeter-totter. It's like boo kill. Boy. Now, I'm standing on the edge of the stage. I walk 1 foot. I smelled more marijuana at one time than I even imagined was possible. It was like rounding a building and bumping into a 9-foot joint coming the other way. Excuse me. Bending from the filter, of course. I love animated things like that. I give credit to General Motors that people put them down, but they had a great cost to them and their new Flint, Michigan plant. They've put in 4 expensive animated smokestacks. So now at 5:02, it's a great thing. Oh, we worked all day and now we're done. Moving up and down. Go home! Oh,
we make the cars and we turn them out. Some don't work, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Well, I was in major trouble now. I mean, so I'm thinking to myself, I'm walking towards the mic, I'm thinking, all right, wait a minute, the marijuana, and they're all stolen in a second, everything will be fine. As soon as I said that, I said, no, that's what Dick Clark said in the movie. That has nothing to do with reality. What am I talking about? What does marijuana do? It takes you as an individual, whatever you like that more, that's all. If you like to fool around with little chickens, you'll just get a lot of them someplace. That's... In that part of the country, the wants really aren't that refined when they're stoned. You know, kind of like, let me see that.
God almighty. I could drink the biggest beer in the world. Let me try that. You want to know something? I'd like to give me a Chevy with two steering wheels.
Now, I tried doing things. I tried mentioning the word dope. Nothing worked. I was getting close to the end of my life. My heart was saying, this is it. This is your last day on the earth. I pulled out the big gun. I couldn't help it. I didn't want to use it. It's just a trick, but I had to do it. It's a word. It works in that part of the country every single time. It's a miracle word. The word is shit. I don't understand it, but 6,000 people, Rick, shit. On the stage. People run out, begin to build a statue in the park. He's a hero, he's a hero, he's a hero. Parades are scheduled. My God. How does that work? I mean, do they talk about that after the show? Is that it?
What'd you think of the comedian? Let me tell you one thing. When he said shit, I almost died!
Weeks later at breakfast.
Remember what he said? Shit!
Anyway, so I just tell you the shit thing for your own protection. If you're walking in the South, walking in that part of it, someone comes up to you, give me everything you got. Points the gun at you, just poise yourself, clear your throat, shit. Drop the gun.
I didn't know you were a professional.
All right, it's time for another kooky, crazy call.
Another kooky, crazy call is a copyrighted feature.
And this time, we're calling a pet store. And I'm going to disguise my voice and attempt to purchase 10 parakeets. Let's see what happens.
House of Pets.
Yes. Do you sell parakeets there?
Yes, we do.
Excuse me. How many do you have?
I think we have 7 or 8 at the present time.
Well, I'm going to need 10.
Well, we have another store in the area, and I'm sure we could get 2 more from them.
I see. In other words, you'd have to go to another store then, huh?
Yes, we would.
Okay, well, let me think about it, and I'll get back to you later.
All right. Thank you.
If you heard the yodel, then this should be side 2. In just a minute, we're going to go back to the troubadour for the rewriting of the national anthem. This piece was specially recorded in stereo, so to help you get the most enjoyment out of it, a brief stereo demonstration is presented first. Adjust your amplifier accordingly.
Listen, listen.
That's Albert Brooks, real name Albert Einstein. Changed his name for obvious reasons when he got into show business. Albert Brooks's brother was a guy named Bob Einstein, who was a comedy writer on things like the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, and he eventually became well known under his pseudonym as well, best known as Super Dave Osborne. Bob Einstein, brother of Albert Einstein, Albert Brooks. And their father was also a comedian under the stage name Park Your Carcass. It was supposed to be a play on words of a Greek last name. And Park Your Carcass was a reoccurring character on the old Eddie Cantor radio show. His real name, Harry Einstein, father of Bob Einstein and Albert Einstein, Albert Brooks, and Super Dave. And we listened to selections off Albert Brooks's comedy LP from 1973, Comedy Minus One.
This is Dom DeLuise, and I heard that you're going to get married. Well, I have a little advice for you. See, I've been married 19 years. And my advice to you, I mean, if you're getting married... my...
Everybody's getting married. You're not the only one. The other day, Lanchop said to me, I'm getting married. You can't.
Why not?
Oh, honey, you don't know about, well, you know, the birds and the bees.
I know.
What do you know?
How birds have little birds and bees have little bees.
How?
Well, they, how?
Well, they, come on, tell me how.
I don't think you know.
Tell me.
Well, there's a king bee and a queen bee, and the king bee sprinkles his pollen on the queen bee, and they have babies.
Why doesn't the queen bee sprinkle the pollen?
Because the king bee is big and strong and brave like a daddy.
So if he's so big and strong and brave, how come he doesn't have the babies?
Well, because after the king bee sprinkles the pollen, he dies.
Oh, that makes me feel sad.
How do you think he feels? One sprinkle and it's all over.
Yes. Congratulations on your marriage.
Hi, this is Don Adams. So you're getting married, eh? Would you believe marriage is not a word? It's a sentence. It makes two people one. But which one? Before marriage, when a man holds a woman's hand, it's love. After marriage, it's self-defense. You might want to know what I did before I was married. Anything I wanted to. Did you know that in China, it's a custom for a man never to take a girl out before he marries her? In this country, he never takes her out after he marries her. Anyway, this is Don Adams wishing you lots of luck.
I don't know who he is behind that mask, but we need him, and we need him now. He's known as Bruce Wayne by day, wealthy social. The midnight sky. Somewhere in Gotham City, it'll find the Batman's eye. There's a crime wave going on, but not for very long, 'cause the Batman's gonna teach him right from wrong. They call him Batman. They call him Batman. Did you see that strange car?
No, why?
It was shaped like a bat. So when you see the Batmobile quickly pass you by, you know they've heard the bat phone and the commissioner's cry. Yeah, that dynamic duo's out to prove crime doesn't pay, and from the Batcave our heroes keep evil at bay. We need the Batman.
Black, terrible,
As if in answer, a huge bat flies in the open window.
A bat, that's it. It's an omen. I shall become a bat.
Thus is born this weird figure of the dark, this avenger of evil, the Batman. Captain Jan and Boy Dean is a story which will live forever in the hearts of young America.
Police screamers.
Of course, you remember his one night in the late hours at a secluded recording session in one of Hollywood's finer recording studios.
It's a little old lady from Pasadena.
Unknowingly, Henry Decibel, their time-trusted friend and rambunctious recording engineer, accidentally crosses two wires and twists the wrong dial. Lo and behold, emerging from the mysteriously colored cloud of smoke and gases is a sweet little old lady.
Holy senior citizen.
Dressed in a long organdy dress with high button shoes.
Hi, honeys. Hi, Henry. Well, boys, I've waited a long time for this. Have a cookie. I need your help.
The little old lady goes on to explain how she needs the aid of Jan and Dean in her war against those who jeopardize justice. And for this purpose, she magically grants them the secret identities of Captain Jan and Dean the Boy Blunder.
Holy Halloween, Jan. Look at this great costume. It's slick. The little old lady gave it to me.
It's Captain Jan from now on, pal.
I'm sorry.
What did you do, dolt?
I tripped over my cap.
Cape.
Cape.
You do deserve that name, Boy Blunder.
The little old lady goes on to give Captain Jan and Dean the Boy Blunder mystic powers, which will be divulged later, dear listener. Jan and Dean return with the little old lady to their Bel Air Manor, tucked away in the Bel Air Botanical Garden.
Holy landscaper!
In the lofty attic of the palatial mansion. With the little old lady, they work for weeks building an astounding scientific laboratory
match by none.
And so, boys, I'll be in my little house in Pasadena if you want me. And remember, by singing my name, you will assume your secret identities.
The little old lady races out a back door.
Holy sprinter!
Leaps in her superstock Dodge.
Holy hurdler!
And wails away. And thus we have Captain Jan and Dean the Boy Blunder, that titanic twosome about to champion the cause of justice and to triumph over evil.
He goes to school by day, he fights crime by night. He's daring and dashing, this young guy.
Above Surf City, in the basement of the old brownstone Bel Air mansion with a second mortgage, lurk two enemies of our country, unsuspected by anyone, even Captain Jan and Dean the Boy Blunder. Especially Dean the Boy Blunder.
Especially!
Treachery. It's that evil Kong doctor, Dr. Vitamin, and his wretched little wife and assistant, Hypo, who are at this very moment plotting the villainous deeds against us all.
Marshal, with this steady little germ in the water supply of Surf City, we shall destroy these warmongering imperialists once and for all.
Yes, most honorable husband and doctor.
Oh, what a diseased mind, that fevered fiend. At this very moment, our heroes are performing in concert at Chicago's McCormick Place.
Don't worry, fans. They'll be back in just a while.
Meanwhile, backstage...
Oh, holy fig Newton, my transistorized chocolate chip cookie...
Copyright, 1966, Don Altfeld, Cookie Company.
Altfeld is lighting up.
Hi, honeys. Boys, we need you back in Surf City. We need you, and we need you now.
It's a little old lady from Pasadena.
Suddenly, the youthful singers Jan and Dean assume the roles of Captain Jan and Dean the Boy Blunder, and by instant distance mental powers, transport themselves back to Surf City. Copyright 1966, Fred Weider, Metal Powers Incorporated.
Weider.
Make up your mind.
Sorry.
Meanwhile, at Police Chief Barker's office.
The man? That demon of dispensary, Dr. Vitamin, and his wretched wife, Hypo, are planning some diseased demonry. Do you have any ideas, deputies?
Shoot
Hello.
Him! Give him
I don't
nose.
Know what to do.
Oh, I wish the time Planet Twosome was here.
I wish they were here, too, because they could solve it, couldn't they?
Yeah!
Yeah,
I wish
Beaky Boys were here.
The who?
Beaky Boys.
They don't know anything.
I wish
I don't know.
I wish they were here.
As if in answer to his wish, the perilous partners enter Chief Barker's office.
Duh. Captain Jan, that toxic tyrant, Dr. The Vitamin, sent his recording to my office just moments ago.
Also, take some friendly advice from your doctor. Drink one glass of water before bedtime and your troubles will be gone forever.
Holy H2O! What can he mean, Captain Jan?
It's simple, good fellow. Our afflicted adversary is planning to poison Surf City's water supply.
No, please.
To our atom-powered Woody?
Who, me? Who's driving?
As captain here, I must take command and drive, Fink.
Shortly, our crusading companions screech up in front of the Surf City reservoir.
Fully screech and skid.
Wait a minute. Something has gone awry. Our heroes have managed to screech into the reservoir.
You're stepping on my foot again.
Will the amazing allies escape their wet entrapment? Will they be able to stop that antiseptic devil, Dr. Vitamin, from carrying out his insidious plot? Hold your breath until the next episode. Secluded in Bel Air, somewhere in the Bel Air Botanical Gardens, is the palatial estate of young singers Jan and Dean. One day.
Holy banana peel, Jan! Someone's overturned our garbage cans. I bet you it was that little fink down the street, Stevie Guthrie.
No, Freen. Why, it could only be that sinister stinker, that foul fiend of fragrance.
The milkman?
No, it's our arch rival, that wretched refuse collector, that rogue of rubbish. The garbage man.
Quickly, Jan and Dean dash out in front and begin to inspect the overturned garbage.
That ludicrous litter bug has struck again. I wonder what he's up to this time, Crean.
Holy coffee grounds, Ban. Maybe there's a clue among this refuse. What about the... Oh, prune seeds. That's it. How about since corn on the cob? Our arch rivals always leave clues, Ban. Where are they?
Then the boys begin to search through the sea of rubbish.
Blech. I can't take this any longer. It's time to change.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
Quickly, the boys are transformed into Captain Jan and Dean, the boy Blunder.
Look, boy Blunder, wrapped in this old piece of newspaper.
Yeah, it's an old piece of gazelle-ta-fish.
No help there.
Suddenly, the boys look up to see the garbage man speed off in his garbage truck. A small piece of garbage is seen to fall off the back of the truck.
This is odd. Here, boy Blunder, let's take it inside and analyze it in our special super-duper analyzing machine.
All right!
To the attic.
Who, me?
Captain Jan's secret attic laboratory. A piece of garbage is quickly analyzed.
Here's the answer, Spleen.
Yeah, it's garbage. Great gravy. It says it comes from the city dump. What could we do without the analyzer?
Quickly, Ding, to the atom-powered Woody.
Who, me?
You blundering dolt! We were in the attic!
Yeah?
I'll take the stairs and you meet me in a moment.
Where's the moment?
As the boys reach the city dump and begin sniffing, rather snooping around, they are scooped up by that harlequin of the heap's giant garbage scooper and dumped into the garbage truck.
Help! 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 Help!
Help! Oh, great suffering sour!
Keep your ears alert and your nose closed for the exciting conclusion on the other side of this record.
Batman.
conceptual album from the surf music duo of Jan and Dean. I wish I had this record a couple months ago when I played my superhero-themed episode of the Generation Exploitation podcast. I also wish I had this record a few months ago when I played my all-surf music edition of the Generation Exploitation podcast, which is what you're currently listening to, by the way, and Laugh Tracks, a show about comedy on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. My name is Cliff Nesteroff. Somebody lent me this LP a couple weeks ago, and the proper title is Jan and Dean Meet Batman, which Jan and Dean play crime fighters, as we heard on the audio, battling villains and singing surfy-sounding songs about Batman and related DC Comics characters. Very strange concept. Came out around the height of the Batman television show's success with Adam West and Burt Ward. This put out on Liberty Records, 1967. Before that, we heard something off a cassette. I don't usually play anything on tape. Everything we hear on this show is usually on vinyl, but I played a cassette called Getting Married. And it's supposed to be warm wishes and good-natured ribbing for people that are getting married from Dom DeLuise, Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop, and Don Adams of Get Smart fame. And these cassettes were put out by the Pez Confectionaries Company, who make Pez dispensers, also put out a series of cassettes of three sort of B-grade celebrities wishing you, in some instances like this one, wishes of goodwill about getting married. Other ones include Valentine's and birthdays and anniversary type cassettes. I found these in a pharmacy here in Vancouver down in the ghetto for about 50 cents a pop. Originally put out in around 1983 by the Pez Company, and it has a Vancouver address on all these cassettes, and I've never seen them anywhere else, actually.
I'm 35 years old, which is great when the world, all the whole country at least, seems to be 18 and 50. It's nice. Have a reach on each side. And as a result of that arithmetic, in 1951, I was 14. That's what I want to tell you. When grass swept the neighborhood, we hadn't been into grass before that. We were into gang fighting and wine and beer in the park, man. I'm punching the shit out of people. And having jackets with your names, man. And you had Debs. Your girls were your Debs. What are you? I'm a Tomahawk Deb. Regular gangs, man, and turf and all that dumbass shit, and getting into fights over things like girls. You don't want to dance one of my Debs, man. Hey, there's one guy, the guy's dead. I know, man. Shit's on. Shit's on. Gonna be a rumble. Yeah, man, we're gonna get the riffs and the condors and the beacons and the corner boys and the lamplighters and the chaplains and the bishop's man and the five satin gents and the dukes and the corner boys and the rams and the beacons, man. Did I say the beacons? We're getting the same guys, man. Yeah, and then pot came along and gang fighting went away. You know, just in one semester in shop class, guys went from making zip guns to hash pipes, you know? Just cats would say, I'll catch you after the fight, straight. On the corner, cool. Parents dump a lot of things on you. I just was realizing, remembered some of that, too. That'll be cool. I must get into that. Little cliches they lay on you when you're a kid. Of course, there are a lot of words that mean different things and get tricked around on you, but parents always told you, look out, don't break your neck. Get down off there, you'll break your neck. Can you get off those stairs, you'll break your neck. You want to break your neck? Get out of here. Breaking your neck was one of the only injuries there was, along with putting someone's eye out. You'll put someone's eye out with that. Are you crazy? He's gonna break his neck, fall, and put someone's eye out with that stick. The only two injuries there were, no one ever warned you about a fractured ulna or wrist, little thing. Nobody said, you'll cut, you'll scrape yourself. Never, always broken neck, put someone's eye out, it's a pneumonia. Never caught a, you'll catch a cold, you catch a head cold, catch a rhinitis. No. If you lost something, parents had a cliche, eventually you hear it. Well, it just didn't get up and walk away, did it? Please, St. Anthony, help me find my keys. Please, St. Anthony, help me find my keys. Please, God, my keys. Hammer for grace, those deepest and energies, only way there, please. Please, God, help me. Please, St. Anthony, tell God I need my keys. Don't pick at it. That's another one. Don't pick at that, will you? In or out, in or out. Come on now. I suppose if Johnny Finnegan jumped off the Empire State Building, you would have to jump off the Empire State Building, right?
Great one.
Then words change value, too, just ordinary words. Remember, the word trouble doesn't have as much emotion when you grow up. Trouble, he's in trouble, I'm in trouble. Remember, trouble? You're in trouble. I'm in trouble, man. Oh, am I in trouble? When you were in trouble, was one of the few times you'd say, please, and really mean it. You don't say please anymore, expecting that it's going to change the results of anything. You just say please. But remember when you used to think it would help? Please. Oh, please. Please, sister, please, sister. Oh, no, please, man, please, man, please, man, please, man, please, man. That was one of the times she said it real hard, too. Oh, please, no, honest. Hey, no, I'll never do it again. Hey, no. Give me one more chance. I'll turn over a new leaf. Sending away was a magical phrase. What are you doing? I'm sending away. Sending away for something. They're going to send it back. You'd picture Battle Creek, Michigan in your mind.
Hey, this is for Master George Carlin. Get that in the mail right away.
Always got screwed on things I sent away for. Not always. A lot of times I never got them. Right up through puberty, including when I went for Vacutex. Removes pimples through vacuum. You remember that? A little syringe-like thing. Black and white plastic syringe, $2.59, was always advertised on the back of song magazines.
Gets out blackheads with vacuum.
And you knew it worked because it had a drawing of a girl with dots on her face and then a drawing of the same girl without dots, man, so you knew it was all right. Didn't work, though. Not for me. Didn't pull the blackheads out. All it did was make a little red ring around the blackheads. It was good for one weekend, you know, and then people got tired of it. Get your rings and get out of here, will you? Yeah. Using the word black, and of course, black, the use of it is a signal that when a group of people said, we kind of demand to be called this, or would like to be referred to as this, that there's a validity in that. You can be called whatever you want to, and as an individual or a group, really you can. Now, your name can be spelled S-M-I-T-H, and you can pronounce it Janowski if you want to, man. What's the name? Janowski. How do you spell it? That's some idea. Huh? They're all silent. Never mind. It's just the American accent. You could if you wanted to, man. Get away. Anything you want. So it was cool. Like, black consciousness made a lot of other people, other groups, aware of their consciousness and their together. You know, they're, in a way, their separateness, but their self-esteem, you know. I think of black consciousness, and then I think of Irish consciousness. And then I think, when they're conscious, they're great. That's my gang. You know, it's okay to hit your own gang. Yeah. So blacks, like, you used to get a fight if you called someone black, right? Who you calling black, man? Now I'll tell you who you calling Negro, man. Older guys didn't mind. Old guys do. Colored guy. I'm a colored person. I now feel like I'm a Negro or colored person or black, whatever you like. Some people went for Afro-American. Afro-American only lasted for about 2 weeks. So, man, you know, a little cumbersome, hard building, and black was cool. Black is right. Black is straight. And there's value in what you call people. Like whitey, I think about white guy, you know. Sounds kind of dull, man. Bland and colorless white guy. Whitey. Any variation on it, which one you want. Haystack. That's one we don't hear a lot. Gray, too. Gray. We're gray, isn't it? Charlie and the Man and Ofay. Caucasian. I never really liked Caucasian, you know? Sounds like a shoe style. Let me hold the Caucasians in a 9D. It could be a mountain range.
Yes, we're going to the Caucasians again.
Or an order of monks that makes wine somewhere.
The Caucasian fathers, very fine wine.
Could be an illegal operation.
Well, she's had two Caucasians already.
If I was going to be called anything, I think I'd prefer blue-eyed devil. It's got a little romance to it, you know, a little tang.
Let's talk about the atom. The United States Atomic Energy Commission, in cooperation with this station, joins in bringing you a special series of programs on the uses of atomic energy. From East Coast to West, and from North to South, men of science are searching for and finding new ways of applying the tiny atom. Your producer and host for this series is Ed Ronnie of the information staff at the AEC's Argonne National Laboratory. And now, let's talk about the atom. Mr. Ronnie.
Scorching desert sands, cactus, an occasional rattlesnake, thousands of square miles of useless barren land. This is a description of the world's deserts. Since the ancient biblical times, man has trekked through the endless wastes, searching for greener pastures. In our enlightened age, one would think there could be a way to make our deserts bloom and bring forth new progressive communities. The answer may be coming in the form of atomic energy. Energy in vast amounts is the key to turning the Mojave Desert green and the Sahara into a growing garden. How can this be done? Who will do it? Let's explore the subject today as we talk to Dr. Alvin Weinberg, director of the AEC's Oak Ridge National Laboratory at Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Dr. Weinberg and other scientists are thinking in terms of agro-industrial complexes, new energy centers, all beginning with the application of atomic energy. Dr. Weinberg, we mentioned that energy is the key to making the deserts bloom. Could you elaborate on this?
It's really very simple. In order to convert the deserts into gardens, one needs water and one needs fertilizer. One can get water either naturally from rain, or if there is no rain available, as is usually the case in a desert, then one must either pump water from large distances, or alternatively, one must extract the salt that is in seawater and get fresh water from the sea. Now, either pumping of water from distances or desalting the sea does require energy.
Thank you very much, Dr. Alvin Weinberg, director of the AEC's Oak Ridge National Laboratory, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. We have talked about an industrial agricultural complex, a dream of a new era for the deserts of the world. Another instance where atomic energy will play a leading role for the betterment of society.
The United States Atomic Energy Commission and this station have brought you in touch with modern-day uses of atomic energy. Listen again as we talk about the atom and its application to our lives. Your producer and host has been Ed Ronnie of the information staff at the AEC's Argonne National Laboratory.
That is an LP titled Let's Talk About the Atom, a 6-LP set originally designed to be played by radio stations in the year 1960. This collection released by the United States Atomic Energy Commission, and it says the subtitle, a series of 12 radio interviews with leaders in science on the beneficial applications of nuclear energy. So pro-atomic energy and nuclear energy, and I would even say atom bomb propaganda, Cold War LP. Before that, we were listening to selections from George Carlin, Occupation Fool, his classic combi LP on Little David Records. And that does it for this edition of the Generation Exploitation Podcast and Laugh Tracks, a show about comedy on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. My name is Cliff Nesteroff. Talk to you soon.
R-A-W. R-A-W.